Well, hello, friends. It has been about a year since I've been able to work in this way. Actually, I think a little more than a year. It's been a difficult year in many ways, and I've been meaning to continue with the work of recording the second part of the Rays and the Initiations. The first part has been written. The commentary is in written form on Makara, and maybe the time will come when we can release some of the discussions that have occurred within the faculty in a video format. But now some of these video presentations are being transcribed into written form. And I think that's going to be very good for all of us. That way, according to your preference, you will be able to study this material. Now, when we last worked together, we had reached the point of beginning the work on the Antikarana. And we had done 33 programs together, and this is the beginning of the 34th. Now, that was at least one computer ago. So I've had to make some adaptations here with the new computer, which is not yet properly equipped as the old one was. So please do bear with me as we attempt to go forward here. I've also been advised by the people who are transcribing into written form this kind of work that I should speak more slowly. And so I will attempt to do so. So let us begin to work our way through this very important section on the Antikarana. Many have felt that if there is anything startlingly new in the presentation of DK, Master DK, concerning meditation, it has to do with the presentation of the Antikarana methods. There are actually several, but he presents one in particular, which involves words of power and the creative imagination. From the very beginning, when one is attempting to contact the higher self from a point of tension on the fourth subplane of the mental plane, the Antikarana work is really, in fact, beginning. But it continues, and there are at least two other methods, one of which Master DK presents involving the words of power. Now, in this paragraph, not all of the images or the little diagrams have appeared, so I'll have to switch over to the AAB folio view. You can see these here. They are represented, but they did not come out in the text that I am using. So I'll do that as I go along. The bridge, by this he means the rainbow bridge, as the agent of alignment. In a way, alignment is both the beginning of the process and as well represents the climactic achievement. If we are entirely in alignment with our higher aspects, they can penetrate the lower fields of consciousness and make their presence felt, and our lower consciousness is thereby greatly expanded, and we leave what is called the darkened room. Interesting how the analogies work and the little symbols and allegories. So often we are told that the disciple stands within a darkened room, a darkened chamber. This is, of course, the representation of his lower, much constrained consciousness. The word alignment is much used in modern esoteric training. As I say, it is both the beginning and the end. I would point out that in making his alignment, the aspirant is only establishing the first stage of his process of realization. Realization, we realize, is actually a capacity, a siddhi, which occurs on the fifth subplane here of the atmic plane. So it is a very high state of consciousness and is beyond subject-object dualism as we normally conceive it. Okay. So he's making only his first stage, establishing his first stage in the process of realization. He is establishing in his own consciousness the fact, this is at first, through alignment, the fact of his essential dualism. What is this dualism? Which eventually we have to transcend by identifying as the soul. It is the dualism between the lower self, the personality, which is an integration of the lower 18 subplanes, and the first stage of the higher self, the soul, on its own plane, or at least on the higher mental plane. It is debatable what is the real plane of the soul or angel. One of the charts shows that it is at least the Buddhic plane. And there has been a fall of the soul or angel from the cosmic astral plane, whereon it received its training, down onto the cosmic physical plane, but in a way no lower than the Buddhic level. The second fall, however, takes it down to the higher mental plane, and that is a very great sacrifice for such a being, having pervaded the entire universe, let us say of man, with a fragment of myself, I remain. I would also point out, says the Tibetan, that the critical aspect of this process is only arrived at when the distinction is sharply defined and recognized between the integrated and potent personality, which eventually becomes, in a way, the dweller on the threshold, and the soul. So during the stages of uncertainty, when it is not possible to make a clear distinction between these two centers, the critical aspect of this process has not yet been reached. We can question ourselves, have we reached the point at which we can engage with the critical aspect of this kind of work, because we have understood the great distinction between what we ordinarily call the lower self and the higher self. Now here I think I had better switch over to the actual text. Whoops. Things are moving a little faster in this computer than I anticipated. So here we have a statement. It is an occult truism to state that the aspirant is to be recognized by, and here we have a kind of a triangle. And this triangle represents a triplicity. And how should we look at this? How should we look at this triplicity? Perhaps we can think of the triplicity as the threefold personality, because although the aspirant is reaching towards something higher, his experience of that something higher is as if it is not really himself. He experiences himself as mind, emotions, and body or etheric physical nature, reaching out towards something. Now, essentially, the man is a triplicity in a higher way. He is personality. He is soul triad. He is monad. I include the triad and the soul together because the real ego, capital E, is the spiritual triad, and when it is in its sheath or the causal body, it is called the soul as we normally deal with that term. But from a higher point of view, the true soul is the spiritual triad. And then, of course, there is the triple monad. So the aspirant is a threefold being in terms of his own usual cognition, but he is reaching towards duality. The disciple is represented this way, the vertical line here. It's really the number 10, interestingly. It's one of the ways of writing the number 10 in the secret doctrine, or recognized duality. We certainly see here the vertical line of aspiration, and we also see a kind of representation of the right and the left-hand path between which choice has to be made. And the duality that is recognized is that of the soul with which the disciple sometimes identifies. At least he identifies with that type of energy entering his personality nature, and the customary personality energies. So there has been a simplification, and that simplification continues. The disciple is recognized duality. So from the time we enter the second tier of petals in the egoic lotus, the love tier of petals, and this is the hall of learning, we begin to learn about the higher of the dualities, and they become established recognitions in our life, and we can at will align with the higher of these dualities and experience something of its nature, but we are not yet entirely identified as that higher of the two dualities. And then the initiate is recognized by the circle or unity, because the true initiate of the third degree has entered the has developed the ability to focus within the causal body, within the egoic lotus, and then all things are seen as included in a unity. The personality is not seen as different, but is seen as a projection of the higher self, of the soul, on the higher mental plane. And that personality is included, we might say, in the soul demonstration. It is not outside the unity. So we can assess for ourselves where we stand. Probably many of us are still fighting the battle with duality. After all, the human being, from his monadic perspective, is a scorpionic being, and the scorpionic being is a fighter. Conflict with duality. Let's see, maybe I can open up one more of these, possibly, and you'll see what I mean. If we go to esoteric astrology, page 332, I believe. So let's see how we do here. 332. And we'll go a little bit further down. Whoop, that wasn't very good. Let's see, 332. All right, let's try that again. Going back, okay. And here we are, I guess it's 333. We have conflict with duality of the fighter. So we have not yet reached the higher unity, at least most human beings have not yet reached the higher unity, which is the true disciple. Here it says initiate, but it really is the initiated disciple. So now we continue. Note that the symbol of duality for undeveloped humanity is as follows. It does not have that vertical line of aspiration, in which the separation of the higher nature from the lower is depicted. But here, for the disciple, the ability to reach the higher nature is depicted, and the realization of two ways to go, either the way of the personality or the way of the soul. Here, for undeveloped humanity, the horizontal bar separates them, and it is not possible, really, yet to reach the higher of the dualities. So the separation of the higher nature from the lower is depicted. In the case of the disciple, it is here as follows with the vertical bar, showing the path across, or, and it's really a Libran symbol in a way, or the narrow razor-edged path between the pairs of opposites, and this narrow razor-edged path, which we learn to tread as we discriminate between the pairs of opposites, giving the personality its due, and yet trying to obey the laws of the soul, eventually turns into the path of return, which is in fact the Rainbow Bridge, which is in fact the Antikorana, which leads us to the next possible unity. We always move from unity to duality to unity to duality, and this is the path of ascent. These symbols, simple as they are, embody and convey vast truths to the illumined mind. And when we see something of this nature, naturally we will want to meditate upon it, because DK is conveying very important hints here. I think you can see when looking at this circle with the horizontal bar that from the lower part of the circle, half of a vertical radius could be raised, creating the tau, the tau. And I think this would be a good symbol for the integrating personality on the verge of becoming a real aspirant. And when the vertical bar goes above the horizontal bar, we do have the real aspirant. And finally, when it reaches the top, we have the disciple. Now, for the moment, it seems that the horizontal bar disappears, but eventually we will have the cross. And the cross is the sign here of synthesis. And eventually we will have a whirling cross in two directions. And this will be the synthesis of all of the energies involved and represent even the higher initiate. So, as he says, vast truths are waiting here to be revealed if we ponder on these things. Suffice it to say, undeveloped humanity does not have a conscious vertical dimension in its thought. It is not consciously striving towards the spiritual worlds, but eventually this becomes the case, especially as the fifth petal of the egoic lotus reaches its, let's say, midway point of development. In the beginning of that fifth petal, it can simply be pure egotism. But later, aspiration becomes a possibility, and eventually, when the fifth petal is completely opened, we do have the first degree initiate. So eventually, we become like the earth. We become the cross, and not only the cross inscribed in the circle, which is the symbol of the earth, but the whirling cross as well. And I suppose one day our entire planet, as it progresses, will be symbolized by the whirling cross moving in two directions and eventually in all directions. So, you know, let us ponder on these things. We certainly are moving from that which is supine, you know, representing the attitude of sleep, the horizontal, to that which is vertical, the upright standing individual, aligned with the higher possibilities, aligned with the will, aligned with the monad. And eventually we become the all-inclusive one, in a state of isolated unity, even though sometimes the Tibetan does not prefer those two words. He thinks better words could be found. In a state of isolated unity, we have isolated in our consciousness the great unity, which is, and all things are seen as part of one thing, and all things interrelated. So, let us now move to the next paragraph. Okay. I'm just learning to manage this new computer here a little bit, so please do bear with me. I'm learning also where the little symbols have been copied and where they have not. Relatively speaking, and speaking in terms of the mental consciousness, which should, of course, characterize all true disciples, regardless of their ray, the realization of duality is only to be found in the three worlds and on the mental plane. There's something about the lower mind which divides very successfully subject from object, and they definitely seem to be different and distinct. So many brilliant intellects have seen it this way. There's the subject and the object, but this proves that although highly intelligent, they were not initiates of the third degree, where subject and object begin to coalesce. When the third initiation is taken, the power of the lower pair of opposites is no longer felt and exists no more. What should we say? The personality fades from distinctness. It is no longer the focus. I also had in my old computer the ability to write many codes, which would immediately give me long words. But let's see if that can be retraced and regathered. The personality fades from distinctness. It is no longer the focus. Okay. A liberated consciousness and an unrestricted awareness, relatively so anyway, unrestricted as regards the initiate, moving within the orbit of the planetary logos, though not unrestricted as regards that greater life, which moves within still other and greater defined, let's see, what do we have here? Greater defined, whoops. Limits, okay. Sorry for this, the split between the pages in the old system I used to be able to do something about that. So the true initiate does have a much greater capacity to move within the larger frame of the higher ethers, where we can say that the will and nature of the planetary logos are much more fully understood. Because up until the time a person is initiate, he is pretty well moving in the area that we can call the dense physical body of the planetary logos. And even with respect to the higher three planes of the mental plane, there's a question as to whether we are dealing with the dense physical body of the planetary logos or whether we have in fact entered something that is of a truer spiritual nature. Okay. So freedom is a relative term, and our present degree of movement within the planetary logos is pretty well, for people of our type, confined to the dense physical vehicle of that logos. But increasingly, the cosmic ethers, which are the locale where true spiritual development is experienced, will be opened to us as we continue to build the Antikorana. So there are restrictions even for the initiate of the third degree and beyond, even for the very great initiates of the sixth and seventh degree. There are always restrictions. There are rings past not which they cannot yet penetrate, and all successive penetration is gradual after having proved the fitness thus to penetrate. So, a liberated consciousness and an unrestricted awareness, unrestricted as regards the initiate moving within the orbit of the planetary logos, within the cosmic physical plane, that is. There are aspects of the planetary logos which are cosmic astral, cosmic mental, and beyond. And of course, movement in those spheres is not yet possible to such an initiate. Though not unrestricted as regards that greater life, which moves within still other and greater defined limits, and we're talking here about the solar logos, are both understood and expressed. Within the planetary ring Pasnat, the initiate moves with freedom and knows no limitation in consciousness. And I think here we are talking about the cosmic physical plane. As I said, there are aspects of the logos which are far above his etheric and physical body. That is why the higher levels of our planetary and systemic planes are called formless. They are only relatively so. Actually, the entire cosmic physical plane from the cosmic perspective is a plane of cosmic form. Okay, and then moving back here, because there is this little symbol. It is this symbol with the vertical division of the circle, which is the true symbol of alignment. I think that's very worth considering, involving as it does the sense of duality between the left and the right, but indicating at the same time the way through what are called the walls of limitation. So the true symbol of alignment. Let's see if we can somehow emphasize that. And moving beyond the walls of limitation. They are not impenetrable, of course. And when we manage to evince the vibration of that which lies on the other side of the wall, then we will be in the position to penetrate that apparent wall, which is, after all, as he tells us, an electrical phenomenon. Okay. Now I wonder how big I can make this. Maybe this will be a little clearer. Students would do well to consider the building of the Antikarana as an extension in consciousness. Well, perhaps not the kind of consciousness that we are accustomed to with its subject-object dualism, but an extension of consciousness which leads to the unification of subject and object. I suppose the heart center and the heart and the head have to be involved with their Buddhic energy in order to realize this unification of the observer and the observed. This extension is the first definite effort made upon the path to bring in the monadic influence with full awareness. Monadic influence is there, of course, always, as it basically is conditioning the etheric body and, to an extent, all of the vehicles of the personality. The monadic ray shows up as conditioning of the in the mind. And the monadic influence being an influence this on the second plane from the top of the cosmic physical plane influences the astral body, which is the second plane from below, according to numerical resonance. So this extension is the first definite effort, and it's done pretty much around the time of the second initiation. The first definite effort upon the path to bring in the monadic influence with full awareness. That's the key, because the influence is there, but we are not aware of it. And finally, directly, in a way that can be, I would say, evoked through invocation. This process constitutes the individual parallel to the present inflow of force from Shambhala, about which I have elsewhere spoken. Well, the entire hierarchy has to experience Shambhala together, not so much individually, unless the initiate is of a very high caliber. The hierarchy has to be protected by its entire personnel at certain times of the year. Otherwise, it cannot safely experience the inflow of shambolic force. Now, when we realize that the masters themselves have to be protected from the shambolic force, it is unlikely that any aspirant or disciple of our type is going to easily walk through the doors of Shambhala at this particular point in evolution, as some who are misguided and over-eager seem to believe to be possible. So this is the individual parallel, the monad entering the consciousness and the life with full awareness, and finally directly recognized and directly invoked and therefore evoked. That highest center of energy upon our planet is now having a definite effect upon that center, which we call humanity. So that tells us something very important about the response of humanity to the will of God. There have been various Shambhala impacts, but now I think humanity is in a condition to become consciously aware of some aspects of what is the will of God, our planetary logos. So we as monads expressing upon the Buddhic plane, but emanating from the monadic plane, are beginning to be highly influenced by this highest of all centers. And the building of the Antikarana is one method by which we indicate or make possible this relation between will and our present human condition. So this is brought about, he says, by direct alignment, and not via the hierarchy, as has hitherto been the case. Now the analogy here, the soul or egoic lotus is, how does he describe it? Let's see if I can put it here. Bypassed. And there is a direct alignment between the soul-infused personality on the fourth subplane of the mental plane and the spiritual triad, beginning with the monastic permanent atom. You see it pretty well here in this diagram. The soul, or what we call, what we usually call the soul anyway, the sheath of the triad is bypassed, and then we enter the realm of the triad and eventually the realm of the monad. So it is a direct path, and let us say that the intervention of the solar angel in the life is beginning to wane. The man is taking on increasing responsibility. When the individual Antikarana has been successfully started, and there is even a tenuous thread of living energy, living light, connecting the threefold personality and the spiritual triad, then the inflow of the will energy becomes possible. So this is interesting, of course, because we imagine that we experience a certain type of will when we align with the egoic lotus. And there is this alignment with the egoic lotus. That's part of our initial meditative procedure. And the sacrifice petals carry the note of will, and so do the synthesis petals, but they are all somewhat a veiling of the true will. And the true will is going to come through the spiritual triad from the monad. So we're not really experiencing the unveiled will. Well, we're not experiencing that at all, but at least the less veiled will until we, via the Antikarana, manage to penetrate into the impersonal realms of the triad. This, in the early stages, can be most dangerous when not offset by the love energy of the soul. That's why it's so important. It is the soul-infused personality which must project the line of living light into the triad. Love from the soul is essential. Otherwise, we have the problem which appeared during the Second World War when a group of shambolically related personalities, among which Hitler and Goebbels were two, and there were five others, were able to contact a kind of inverted Shambhala force without the infusion of the love energy. So it says here that only one thread of the threefold Antahkarana passes through the egoic lotus. And the other two threads relate themselves directly with the triad, and hence eventually with the monad. So this is true of the individual and of humanity as a whole, and the effects of this alignment can be seen demonstrating in the world at this time. Now the question could be asked, which threads we're speaking of, and obviously the life thread is very much involved with the will aspect, and this is not the thread. This is a thread that is passing through the triad and the monad, and I suspect the consciousness thread as well. Maybe we'll find the sources for determining which of the three threads passes through the egoic lotus. I suspect it is the creative thread. The soul on the higher mental plane is a center of creativity, producing its personality, and in the white magical process, the individual becomes increasingly creative under soul impression. So this is a speculation at first, but let us see what is the thread which actually passes through the egoic lotus. We'll try to determine that from DK's writing. Now, I'm offering this first little commentary after about a year on the last day of Mercury retrograde. And so I want to determine whether it's really taking or not. I have no way immediately to time it. So I'm going to cut number 34 short here and just make sure that it has taken in the proper manner. And then we will continue with number 35, and I will understand better how this new computer and the program are working together. So please excuse a little bit of the halting nature of this attempt to start the process again. These are very deep matters dealing with what we normally consider to be the abstract aspects of our life, and we have to concentrate very focally in order to make sense of these, of the way that these higher aspects of our nature actually work. We're entering a new area. We're dealing with light and the bridge of light, and we're dealing with resonance and mathematical relationships between the higher vibratory levels and the lower. And altogether, we're attempting to bring together the higher reaches of our nature and the lower. We do not want to be like the individual with that horizontal line where we cannot reach the higher aspects of our nature. We want to follow the bridge across and penetrate the apparent walls which seem to isolate every higher aspect of our nature from the one immediately below. So I will now, this is kind of an experiment, and hopefully it's been just a few paragraphs here, but something said, and hopefully it has recorded by tomorrow when Mercury is direct. Perhaps it will be easier to flow along. So our next undertaking will be number 35. And we'll see you then.